Swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone! Cassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
And he swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over!
The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Hey, welcome back to Play Testy. It is episode 126. If you're listening on drop day, it's September 9th. This is the official podcast of the White Sox stinking, but also the Red Sox losing to the White Sox that stink. So what does that make the Red Sox? Also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEI. Before we get going, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening. Wherever you get your podcast, subscribe. Rate us 5 stars. It helps us out so much. We really appreciate when you guys subscribe. So do that. Also, check us out on YouTube. We are on the Play Testy playlist on the WEI page. So you can find us there. You can hit the thumbs up. We really appreciate when you guys do that too. And we're always, as always, at Play Testy on all your socials, at Twitter, at Instagram, at Play Testy. Here with Sammy, here with Joe, who's in for Pat today, who's tending to a knee currently because he's Dr. P. Fellas, I don't know what we were, because, okay, so Sammy, you weren't here on the last pod. But basically, on the last pod, we didn't declare the season over, but we said that the Red Sox were out of contention, and it's like it's not mathematically over, but it's like kind of overski. And you know, like obviously, making that declaration going into a White Sox series is a little bit risky because like there's always the risk that they win all three games in that series. And had they won all three games in the series, guess what? They'd be three games back, and we'd be looking pretty stupid for declaring it over, even though there's what, 20 games left, if I'm not mistaken? Is there 20 or is it 19 now? We got to figure that out. But not a lot of games left. They took 2 out of 3 from the White Sox, so they are 4 out. Had they swept, had they won this third game, as they should have, as Richard Fitz made his major league debut and pitched great, he deserved to get the win. They could have been 3 games out, but alas, they're not. Offense did not score in the third game. Zach Kelly had a tough ninth inning, to say the least, and just the game did not go in the Red Sox favor, and they take 2 out of 3, and they needed a sweep to get back into things. There's 19 games left, as Sammy has put in the chat, 19 games left and 4 games out. Obviously, 3 of those games are against the Twins, which, you know, that's why it's so significant. That's why it's so important to get it to 3, because if you get it to 3, you put yourself in a position where, hey, obviously it's hard to sweep a good team, but if you go up against the Twins and you sweep the Twins, then guess what? You got the tiebreaker, and now you're tied with them, so you're all of a sudden in the playoff spot if you can get to 3 games by that point. And obviously, that's not even close to off the table. There's still plenty of time before that series comes about, but these are the games where you have to take advantage. These are the series that you have to take advantage of, because you have the White Sox right there in your home ballpark, and it's followed by Orioles and Yankees, who have played really good baseball and are obviously the cream of the crop in the division. So obviously, my personal stance is the Red Sox are still out of contention. They are 4 games back with 19 to go. That is really, really, really difficult. Out of contention doesn't mean they can't get back into contention. I'm not saying the season's over, because obviously they're one good day away from being within that point of time, within that reach where you could face the Twins in a series and overtake them. So you can't declare the season over when they're one day away from being there. But 4 games out with 19 to go is, by definition, in my opinion, out of contention. It was pretty disheartening to me to see them lose that last game of the series. And obviously, it was going down at the same time as the Patriots were pulling off a massive upset of the Bengals. So like vibes in my head, and I'm sure all of, you know, all of the massive Red Sox fans around New England's head were going up and down and going for a loop. But yeah, I mean, that's a game you have to win. You're tied late with the White Sox. Forget the stat they had on the board at some point, but it was like when the White Sox are losing after 6 innings, they're 0-70 or something like that, and they haven't won a game.
They haven't won a game that they've been trailing after the 7th inning this year. That was the first one.
They weren't trailing after 7 in this one. It was close. They were tied in the 6th.
Yes.
Technically, yeah. But it just goes to show you that these are the games that the White Sox don't win, and the Red Sox needed to win, and it sucks that they didn't.
Right, and so I have a lot of pet peeves that I discuss all the time with you guys because I'm a big time complainer. Two of them. I don't like when people say the Red Sox or any team, any sport, quote unquote, should have won the game, because then I say, well, why didn't they if they should have? And then I also don't like when this is Red Sox specific, baseball specific, I should say. I don't like when people say they expect a sweep. I don't think it ever makes sense to expect a sweep. That doesn't mean I won't predict a sweep here and there, but to expect a sweep, I think, is a little bit much. Both of those off the table for how bad this White Sox team is. I agree with you, Gordo. They should have won, and they should have won because the White Sox are, and this is not an exaggeration, literally the worst team in the history of Major League Baseball, which, depending on who you ask, has been around for 123 years. At least some people will argue longer, but I'm going with 1901. 123 years. Just conceptualize that. How many teams there have been? You have to win those games. That's in the middle of a playoff hunt at home. And you got a great start from Richard Fitt. I just don't like, how do you even break this game down? They lost to the worst team of all time. And that's not, and I'm, you know, hyperbolic sometimes. This is not hyperbole. This is literally, again, the worst team ever. And the Red Sox lost by 5 runs to them today when they needed a win at home. And I'm just like, I feel like they lost the series.
Sammy, let's back it up. You're going up against the Chicago White Sox. You're going up against Chris Flexen, where the White Sox have lost 21 consecutive games that he has started. And you get 5 2/3 of zero earned run ball from Richard Fitz. Obviously, 2 unearned runs. The Casas era was tough there. And like, obviously, Weissert comes in and doesn't get the job done. But you get as good of a start as you could have dreamed of from Richard Fitz. I would have never have thought that in his major league debut, and I don't care that he's going up against the White Sox, would have never thought that he would be going into the sixth inning. And he did, and he was great. And that's awesome. You get that start and you're going up against that team and you're going up against that pitcher. That's got to be a win. Got to be a win.
You got your A lineup out there as well. It's just, and you have, I know it was only one run, but you have a lead for most of the game. Just so not the worst loss of the season. I still think that goes to that Yankees game where the Red Sox had them, the Yankees, down to their last strike. And we all got to witness it in person. Yeah. It was painful. I was like, oh, I'm so mad right now. This one, I'm kind of like, I can't even be mad. I'm just like numb. I'm numb. This loss, I was just telling the guys off air that I was in Denver last week for a work trip, which is why I wasn't on the podcast. And I was unbelievably busy every single day from like when I woke up until when I went to bed. So I didn't have time to watch the Red Sox. And I think I forgot how frustrating this team is, because today when I sat down to watch, I'm thinking, oh, okay, this is fun. Oh, Trevor Story's back. That's exciting. Ah, Richard Fitz debut. I'm really excited to watch the Red Sox game. And when it ended, I'm just like, God, I kind of miss being on the work trip and not being able to watch the Red Sox and just looking at the box score and being like, oh, I wonder how this happened. Well, it looks bad. Ugh. So, yeah, it's great to be back. That was just a entirely numbing loss. Not even painful, just numbing.
Sammy, I've got a question for you, Sammy, because me, Joe, and Pat, we went into this in depth on the last podcast about where the team stands. And obviously, coming off the Mets series, which was way worse than this series, even though obviously we all agree they should have swept it. This game was right there for the take and they didn't take it. Where are you on the season? Like, do these games matter? Like, where are you on the scale? Like, just when you watch these games, what are you feeling? Because obviously when you watch them and you know that they matter, like if they were tied for a playoff spot right now, you'd be watching these games like they're playoff games. I don't think you're probably watching them like that right now. Are they dead to you? Are you still watching these like they count? Like, take us through your head.
Well, they're very close to being quote unquote dead. The only thing that's keeping me going is the fact that the Twins are even colder than the Red Sox and there's still a head-to-head series left. So, you know, obviously I want the Red Sox to keep winning. I want the season to go on, like in terms of them having a chance to make the playoffs, but each loss feels a little less painful. if that makes sense. Because I'm thinking, like, all right, now it's unrealistic. If they lose tomorrow, I can't be that upset. It's not like they're going to make a crazy run. But then the Twins lose, and my brain is like, you know, you don't want to be that guy who quits on the team, and then they come back, and you gotta live with that, knowing that you gave up on them. And so the last time I was on the show, we talked about the Red Sox and described them as being on life support. So I feel like, to me, I'm still kind of in that same spot. Like, they're on life support, but the doctor just gave a grim diagnosis, and it's not looking good. So I guess it's like watching someone on life support, but it doesn't feel like it's going to end well. It's not like a hopeful, like, they'll be okay. It's like, oof, God.
Are they in hospice?
Not quite in hospice. It's tough, though, because this Twin series is pretty much at the very end of the season, so I'm not willing to declare them dead until they're really, like, mathematically eliminated. Of course, if they, like, fall a few games behind the Twins, and then maybe they win, like, 2 out of 3, but it's still a 4-game deficit, then I'm not going to, you know, I'm hopeful, but I'm not crazy. So they'll be dead at that point. But right now where I'm at is kind of like clinging on to the last shred of hope we have. But, you know,
that's a good way to put it, Sammy. That's a great way to put it. Is that right. Twin series being at the end of the schedule is truly the last shred of hope that you have as a fit? Because if it wasn't there, you'd be 4 games out. And at that point, if there's no series, we're not thinking like this. It's literally that schedule quirk that has them right there at the end, where I feel like usually at the end of the season, it's like all divisional games. There's a lot of divisional games at the end for the Red Sox, but that series being there in particular.
Macro view, I'm sure when we look back on this team, we'll say, hey, they were playing competitive ball in September. That's what we wanted. That's what we expected based on the moves they made in the offseason. It's never something we're going to be thrilled about. They're the Boston Red Sox. They should go into the season with much higher expectations, but they didn't. So I'm sure we'll look back on it a little more fondly. But right now, it's numbing. I want to say painful, but it feels different than that. Numbing.
No, it's not pain. It's not pain because you watch the games with a different attitude. And what sucks is that, and obviously they've changed how they're approaching things. Like, that's why you're seeing guys like Luis Guerrero and Richard Fitz, who we're all excited to see these guys. We've been following these guys and the minors for so long, and maybe less long in Richard Fitz case because he was traded here in the offseason. But like, Luis Guerrero is a guy we've heard about for years and have been following. And you see those guys come up, it shows that the team is kind of acknowledging where things stand. That being said, they could help. The guy that is also coming back with those guys is Trevor Story, which I think all of us were, and I'll get on my soapbox here for a little bit. I tweeted this, but I'm just so like appreciative, and I just am in admiration of Trevor Story, not just because he was pronounced dead for the season in April, like gonzo. He was not going to come back. Like, they had the timeline out. It's like, oh, maybe like October, but like at that point, are you really going to bring a guy back if you're in the playoffs for the first time? Probably not. So he was done so over the season, and guess what? Like, way ahead of schedule, not only comes back during the season, but comes back 3 weeks before the season ends, which is impressive in its own right. But the fact that he pushed the envelope despite the team being at the time 5 games out, like, this team was as good as dead. And maybe they look a little bit less dead now. But I mean, when you factor in the games back, it basically is just as dead. And he still took it upon himself to make sure that he made it back, which, you know, we talk about the lack of leadership on this team. We talked about it, Joe. We talked about it a lot last episode with the Rafael Devers stuff, with him not talking to the media. Trevor Story was the guy that was supposed to be the leader of this team. Obviously, it's hard to lead when you're not on the field. He, in this case, exuded incredible leadership by example by making sure that he made it back for his teammates, regardless of where the team was in the standings, because not everybody would do that. I was impressed. Joe, what were your thoughts just seeing Trevor Story back? Is it a little bit conflicted in your head because of the standings, or are you just watching in admiration because he's back at all?
It's a little bit of, like you guys were saying, sort of questioning in terms of the season. I mean, I'll just say, like, right out front, they might still be in it, but they're not in it. I don't think they're making the playoffs at all, which is some of the reasons why I kind of questioned why Trevor Story would want to come back. But as you said, Gordo, it shows the kind of person he is, shows the kind of teammate he is, the fact that he ramps up so much after being declared done for the year. He comes in and I would say plays a steady series, I would say, in the two games that he played. He played good shortstop, obviously got an RBI in that second game. And I've always respected Trevor Story. I think when he was initially signed a couple of years ago, he was just put in this real awkward situation where he was kind of declared the shortstop, but you still had Bogarts, and that was, you know, juggling between them and his contract, whatever it is. So I've respected Trevor Story. And yes, he hasn't lived up to the contract. But at the same time, as you said, and I spoke with Rob, with the Podfather on radio this weekend, was that you're not bringing him back for his offense. You're not bringing him back for his defense. You're just bringing him back so you can be that presence in the dugout and in the clubhouse. Because like you said, we talked about Gordo, they've got an issue with their best player not speaking at all. And then the guys who are speaking up aren't, I guess you'd say, prominent players. You know, no disrespect to Kenley or any of the pitchers, so to say. But there's really no one, at least in the offensive side of things, who hasn't been able to step up, you know, and face the music. And Story is one of those guys who before the season was willing to take on that role, and now even in this last stretch of games is willing to stand up there and take all the bullets. So I give respect to Trevor Story, and it's, you know, it's fun to see him like this. It's fun to see him in this role, you know, even if they don't make the playoffs. It's nice to see this guy pull off the comeback that he did.
Yeah, and no, and it's so important, not just, as you said, Joe, not just from an offensive perspective or a defensive perspective. It's so much about giving an example, not just for the guys in the locker room, not just the guys who are there, but the guys down below, the guys like Marcelo Meyer, who we all agree is the shortstop of the future of this team, seeing the shortstop of the present do whatever it takes for the team, regardless of whether the team is going to make the playoffs or not. It's for the guys in that locker room. It's for your brothers. And the Red Sox playoff odds right now, just over 6%. Going into the third game of the series, they were 10. So obviously the loss here took a big hit on them. But regardless, 6, 10, like, those tell the story. It's probably not happening. And this guy, a lot of veterans mail it in. They go home. They're content to just kick it back. I don't want to miss it because we don't know all of the info, but like, I thought it was interesting that Kenley was hurt and didn't pitch, and then they won the game and was available to pitch the next day. Trevor Story came back, was ready to go, regardless of where the team was, for his guys, and that shows a lot, just not just about who he is, but who he thinks that the team should grow guys to be like, because that's important. Like, it's not just about your stats. It's about, are we winning and are we here for each other? But Sammy, seeing Trevor's Story back, did that make you feel anything? Because that's the question. It's like, does it make you even feel anything? Because obviously we're so impressed with him, but are you even feeling anything at this point?
Yeah, well, I agree with what you guys said. It's nice to have a guy that gives a shit. It seems like he could have easily packed it up, taken his money and, you know, rehabbed all offseason long, but he didn't. He worked his butt off and now he's here. But I want to get back to something, Gordo. You said the Red Sox have about a 6% chance, according to Fangraphs, to make the playoffs. Did either of you ever play any of the Pokemon games?
I played Pokemon Go, but I don't think that's what you're talking about.
I was in that nerd category.
Okay, well, I was, and I might still be. But in Pokemon, when you're in a battle... Hey.
Nerd alert.
All right. Nerd! Listen, I'm going to inspire you guys. I might not, but when you're in a Pokemon battle, you can boost your stats as much as you want. And you would think like, okay, if you boost your stats, your Pokemon is going to be either a defensive monster or an offensive monster. But when we're talking about defense, you can as far as 4 times boost your defensive statistic, which is a lot, makes you hard to hit. But there's a mechanic in the Pokemon game called a critical hit. And when you get a critical hit in Pokemon, it ignores all of the defense boosts and gives you a damage boost. So it basically makes it so that the battles aren't just a race to boost your defense. And you have, with every attack, a 6.25% chance to get a critical hit. So basically, what I'm saying is the Red Sox are in a baseball Pokemon battle, and their opponent Twins, Royals, Mariners have their defense boosted really high because the Red Sox are behind all three of them, and the Red Sox badly need a critical hit. Call that a winning streak in this situation. They badly need a critical hit to get through those teams and make the playoffs. So if that doesn't inspire you, I don't know what will.
The critical hit. I'm trying to think of this sounds incredibly familiar, and I can't quite put my finger on what game I played where something similar existed. This is going to kill me.
This is the nerdiest thing I've ever said on the podcast. Like the fact that I knew the percentage off the top of my head. This is probably the lowest low of me on the podcast so far is talking about Pokemon.
I mean, the fact that you know, I know that what much
it
is.
Sammy, you know what it is? They need the, if you play Mario Kart, they need the bullet bill that takes them last place, like all the way up to the top three.
Oh my God, dude, that is the cheap.
That's a good reference.
That is the cheapest item. That thing is so cheap. Like that, it's like communism. You're in like 11th place and all of a sudden you're in fourth. Like, come on, dude.
It's communism. It's like you're in the back, but like, no, we're going to give you the good shit so you can catch up to.
But then you're a target.
They work their asses up to get in the top three, but no, they have the bullet bill back
there. Then you're a target for all the shells and the bombs and all that stuff.
True, true. All right.
Yeah, so you're in first place. You get the blue shell that really whoops your ass. That thing sucks.
So the Red Sox need communism and Pokemon.
Yeah, pretty much. That's where we're at. That's where we're at. But this is the thing. We always say we're going to be real. We're at the point where we need communism.
We need a crit, man. We need a crit. That's what you say in like the world of Pokemon. Be like, oh, crit. We need a crit. Red Sox badly need a crit to get back into the race.
God damn. Well, you know, before we get into the preview, there's one other thing that I really want to touch up on because I didn't know until pretty close, maybe like the day before or the day of. Did you guys know that Don was calling a game, that Don Orsillo was going to call a game in this series until like super close to game time?
I think I saw it like a day or two before, but just because I happened to check Twitter at a good time.
I knew it because when I walked into the EEI booth, I saw him and Bradfo talking with each other.
Yeah, I love that relationship. Him, Don and Bradfo. It's a good like lighthearted, like it's like a brotherly, lighthearted, jabby kind of relationship, which is great. Those are the best kind of relationships. But for all of us that grew up, like especially in our age group, maybe not you, Sammy, because like Don kind of came into the picture when you were like 42. But for me and Joe, at least, and Pat, like Don was our childhood. Like Don, it's like when you think about broadcasters and like what they are. Like on the surface, they're broadcasters. But when you actually think about it, when you watch as many games as we do, if you watch 162 games. Like it's almost like they're extended family because they're in your living room every single night of the spring and summer and sometimes fall. And it's like you hear their voices, they speak to you and they talk about your passions with you. And when that gets ripped from you to bring someone else into the booth, it's almost like jarring. And then when you hear it again, I don't want to say it's like he never left because it definitely doesn't feel like that, but it just reminds you of like what was and just, oh God, I missed Don so much. And it was awesome hearing him call a couple of Tyler O'Neill homers. Like, thank God that it wasn't like a classic, like 3-1 Red Sox loss where like they score one run on an RBI ground out. Like, no, we got to hear Don make some good calls in favor of the Red Sox, call a Red Sox win. It's meaningful to us in this age demographic that grew up with that guy in our living rooms every single night because God, I don't know anyone that doesn't love Don that's a Red Sox fan. Honestly, any age Red Sox fan. Everyone loves him. So it was great to hear him call a game.
Okay, well, here, I'll show my age a little bit because I do very fondly remember Don Orsillo pretty much start to finish. Yeah, my memory of like 2001 and 2 is a little foggy. I think I became the most sentient in 2003. But which was a tough first year to be Red Sox sentient. But I don't know if you guys agree with me. I think he sounded, you know, obviously it's still Don. He sounded a lot different on the broadcast, like a lot more flair than when he was with the Red Sox. And I'm not saying I like this version or the other version more. Just thought it was different. I don't know if you guys agree or not.
Oh, you're right. You're absolutely right. And he's that way with the Padres as well. Like I think so much of that has to do with social media and the home run calls getting posted on social media and that being so much of what makes a clip go viral or not go viral is about the announcer call and how excited they get. It's so interesting to me that the Red Sox, that ownership and Nesson jumped off ship for Don right before that era began. When Don is so much more valuable now than he was back then. It's crazy, but you're right,
Don Sam.
He's a different broadcaster now than he was, but he's adapted for the better.
Can I ask you guys a serious question? Like, this is actually a question that I have trouble answering. And this would probably be a good enough said, but it's in my head right now. So I'm going to ask, what was a bigger loss, Don Orsillo or Mookie Betts?
And I knew, please, you were going there.
Please give me your honest answer. I'm fence riding on this one.
Joe, do you have a definitive answer for this? Because I also feel a little bit on the fence and I want to take a little time to think about it.
If I had to lean a certain way, I would probably say Mookie, just because it's an on the field, off the field kind of thing. But I get it. But everyone was upset. I think the idea is that you do get these scenarios where Orsillo can come back and he can have these moments. So the thing with Betts is he's a guy that can win your World Series. You know, all due respect to Don, he can't win you a World Series.
He can vibe
now
you up.
Batting.
Don Orsillo. That was a complete game shutout. Laughing on the mound though, start to finish.
But yeah, I just think I think from an on-field perspective, I feel like more people I think more people would be influenced if Mookie Betts was still here versus Don Orsillo.
I think I figured out the answer to this question. If I could choose whether to have Don Orsillo have never left and stayed in the booth for the next 20 plus years, or if I could choose Mookie to have never been traded and signed to an extension, I would take Mookie Betts. I really do think that the Red Sox probably at least get to the World Series in 2021 with Mookie Betts and probably make the playoffs now this year, last year, and the year before with Mookie Betts. Probably do. But the reason that Don sits in our minds so much, and like we always have these conversations like this is not the first and it is certainly not the last time we're going to talk about Don Orsillo, is because it was so needless. Like with Mookie Betts, that trade happened and it shouldn't have happened, and ownership should have paid Mookie Betts. We all agree. But at least
they gave us like a reason.
It's a reason. Like if you're just hell-bent against $350 million contracts, like obviously we don't want to accept that, but it's a reason. With Don, they booted him out, and we still truly do not know why they kicked him out of the booth when they did. And why they would do it at all. It makes no sense. It never made sense. And it's been years and it still doesn't make sense. It's almost been 10 years and I've still never heard a legitimate good reason why he's not here anymore. It doesn't make sense.
I think that was the last time I like legitimately cried watching a baseball game. Like when the Red Sox were waving to him and he was like waving goodbye to the Red, I was like, oh my God, this is killing me. This is like a big piece of my childhood. And
that got me.
And that's the thing. It's like, what is the reason? Like, why? It's probably some like a politics thing, but I don't know.
Why do we not know? Like they burned Terry Francona out the door. Like this ownership has burned people out the door.
I think it's ownership. It can't be ownership. Wouldn't it be Nesson or Nesson's parent company?
They own Nesson.
They're not going to make those calls though. Ownership's not going to.
Dude, I don't know. Tom Warner made his career in TV. Like, I think that's right up his alley.
But if he made his career in TV, why would he make such a bad? I don't know. But then also,
dude, I don't know. That's the question.
But then on the other hand, to argue against my own point, why would he not have stopped it? So I don't know, man. It's I know they own Nesson, but it's like it's such a separate entity. It's like, do they meddle with it? Is it just the money? I don't know.
If they wanted Don Orsillo to be here, I promise you Don Orsillo would be here. You're right. There's a difference between pushing him out versus not stopping him. But either way, if they wanted him here, he's here.
Yeah, I agree. And I can't stand conspiracy theories. And like, I think they really show human nature, like not being able to explain something. People are just uncomfortable with it and they just go with these like crazy theories because in their head it makes sense. With this, it's like there's not even a crazy theory I can think of. Like, there's no like conspiracy. There's no conspiracy that I'll hear and be like, yeah, I guess that adds up. It's just like, it's weird, man. It makes no sense.
No, and it sucks because like I said at the beginning when we first started talking about this, but it's like players come and go, but the broadcasters are just, it's supposed to be that constant. And like you have this emotional connection with them because when you're watching, if you watch all the games, it literally just feels like you have an uncle in the house all the time talking to you about the Red Sox.
When my girlfriend and I started dating, she wasn't super into baseball at all, and like a little bit. And I was kind of, she was curious about the Red Sox and like, I'm so into them. And this was years ago. And I remember showing her like the best moments, like the, like when the tooth falls out or when Jerry's tooth falls out and like Don's doing her like the boob grab or the pizza throw, like the great moments from that broadcast. And it just, it goes such a long way of like, it's so entertaining and it's so like engaging. And I'm not saying Dave O'Brien doesn't bring that. I think he's a fine announcer, but Don Orsillo for a local broadcast, and I've said before, I think Dave O'Brien's better served as like a national guy. I think that's a great role for him. And again, I don't think he's bad as the Red Sox announcer, but Don, it felt like he cared so much about the well-being of the team and like, you know, the city and everything. And he felt so, like, he was like an uncle, like you said, Gordo. And it just, when he left, just weird, man. And the more I think about it, the more frustrating it is that not only do we not have a reason, we don't even have like an inkling of a reason. The only thing I can think of is like, there had to have been something political, but that's so broad. Like, what was it? So
yeah, like what?
I don't know. I'm sure we'll find out someday, like years from now, and we won't care as much by then. But when you hear him call a Red Sox game, just to like hear him talk about Fenway and the area around it, it's just like, why is
all
he not
I'll tell here? You, all I'll tell you, Sammy, is Don Orsillo's final season with the Red Sox was 2015. It is 2024, and that wound is still fresh in so many people. People, and like, again, like I hate that we have this conversation, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to, even though you prefaced it, Sammy, but I'm sure a lot of people are going to take it as sort of a jab at Dave O'Brien. And that's not what it's supposed to be. Like, Dave O'Brien is, he's a good broadcaster. Like, I do like him as a broadcaster, but you know, maybe part of it is like childhood nostalgia, but it's just Don Orsillo is just, he's as good as they come. And it really is it is the needlessness of what went down that makes it so confusing. So this will not be the last time we have this conversation. Don does these national games, and every time he does it, I feel like we're going to have this conversation. And Don, he's also not afraid to tweet like about how good he's doing, about how his broadcasts are winning awards, he's certainly not afraid to tweet about how Red Sox ownership or Nesson or whoever made a mistake in letting him go. There was an SI article very recently, maybe within the last month and a half, about him and how he has thrived since that breakup and how the Red Sox messed it all up. And he was not shy to tweet about it. And he shouldn't be, because goddamn, Don, you win that breakup, man. You keep winning that breakup. Like, seriously, do not ever stop throwing shade. I'm serious. I never want to hear the end of it.
Oh, here's one more good thing to just bring some positivity, is that the next time the Sox make the playoffs, Don is usually one of those guys where you guys remember when they made the play, when the Sox would make the playoffs and they would put Orsillo on a different game because you can't have the local broadcasters do that playoff game. Now those things, they might intertwine. So it's like, next time Sox make the playoffs, you might hear Don start calling the game again.
Yeah, that always made me feel like a baseball fan cuck a little bit. But I have another question for you guys. I saw a lot of people tweeting like, oh, I bet Don Orsillo is hyped to call like the Red Sox losing a game or to the White Sox or whatever. But it wasn't the fact that it was the White Sox, but like just losing a game, which of course they won that game. But the sentiment was that Don was rooting against the Red Sox, like he hates them. Do you guys think he like separates the higher ups from the product on the field? Like, do you think he still likes the Red Sox, the team? I'm sure he likes the fans, of course. But do you think he's still in the back of his mind when they win, he's kind of like, nice, nice?
No.
Or do you think he's like, fuck him?
I don't think he's like, fuck him. But I think he understands like, hey, the people who screwed me over, they own this team, they own this product. That product thrives, they thrive. And he had that interview. I forget who it, I think it was with Sean McAdam way back when the Padres came to town. And he said, I stopped being a fan when they fired me. They said they're not a fan of me. So how can I be a fan of them? So
yeah, but them I don't them know if it's ownership or the I don't, team. I'm just wondering how much he separates the two.
Well, the idea is you can separate you.
They own the
product. You can separate like the team and the fan base. Like you can still love the fans and the support, but you can still go against the team. I think those are two completely. It's like three different sectors. You have the team's ownership, the actual team, and then the fans slash the city. I think fan slash city is always going to be there, and I think it's always there for a majority of people who spend time in like the sports media market.
You know what wouldn't shock me? Gordo, you kind of brought this up a little bit with the Red Sox being cheap. Like how he'll does he mention it? Like he tweets about it. You're saying
like he's. I'm not saying about the Red Sox being cheap with like free agency, but like he's not shy to like toot his own horn when someone writes like a piece about how Don's thriving, how the Red Sox messed it up, stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay. So then with that in mind, I'm thinking maybe he does right now at least root against the Red Sox because the narrative. I don't know if you remember, their narrative all offseason long was, oh my God, these guys are so cheap. Again, it's the Boston Red Sox. Where's John Henry? Is he even awake? Is he in his crypt still? So maybe with that narrative, he probably is rooting for them to lose because it just reinforces the they're cheap. They let Mookie go. They let me, Conor go.
You respect because I respect it, dude. Like if I were in his spot, I'd probably root for them to lose too. And like, it's tough because you gotta exit super fan headspace and go to Don. Cause Don grew up a New Englander. He grew up a Sox, like all that. But
I mean, at the same time, I don't think I'm a super petty person in general, but if it involved my work, my livelihood, like if someone tried to take my job from me or fired me unjustly, I would hate them for the rest of my life. That's unforgivable. That's how you put food on the table. So honestly, I respect it from, it's your reputation as well. I respect it from Don. So no ill will towards him. He was one of the best parts about growing up in Massachusetts and watching Red Sox games was hearing him. And of course, Jerry Remy as well. So nothing but love for Don.
Yeah, man, those broadcasts, like that seriously was our childhood. And, you know, Just because it's not there anymore doesn't mean we can't have an appreciation for like, goddamn, like, ugh, I miss it. I really do.
I can't listen to Padres games, though. It kills me.
Oh, I like watching them. And it kills me in a way, but I think I like putting myself through the pain.
It's like you get dumped and then the girl or guy goes and dates this like super hot Chad who lives in San Diego and they're having a great time together doing the San Diego diet, bro, and playing friggin' guys being dudes every single day. That's how it feels.
Yeah. Well, we love Don on this show. There's no Red Sox fan that doesn't love Don. We got to move forward to the series preview. Sox have a series upcoming with the Orioles, who are 82-62. They are 6-6 in their last 12 games. They split a four-game series with the Red Sox in mid-August that at the time seemed like, hey, that's a pretty good series to split. But we got a three-gamer coming up with these guys, and obviously you can't split a three-gamer, but this is a series that if the Red Sox want to get back into this, they've got to at least win. And to be honest with you, to get back into this, they're going to have to sweep a series that they probably are not favored to sweep. And what better time than the present? Let's do the matchups here. We got Brian Baio. All these Red Sox pitchers were pushed back a day, by the way. But we got Brian Baio versus Cade Povich, who earlier in the year had walk issues. That's calmed down a little bit. He had a good start against the Red Sox, then allowed 5 earned runs in back-to-back starts versus the Astros and the Dodgers, but most recently, 7 1/3 shutout with 10 strikeouts versus our favorite Chicago White Sox. Second game, Cutter Crawford versus Albert Suarez, who had a really good start against the Red Sox. 6 shutout last time. He's got a 3.49 ERA for the year, and he's legitimately good for the first time ever in his career. The brother of Robert Suarez. He did let up 3 homers and 6 earned runs to the White Sox his last time out. So I guess we'll see, but that's a good pitcher. Game 3, we've got Nick Pivetta versus Dean Kremer. 4.23 ERA for Kremer since coming off the IL in July. 6 innings and 3 earned runs or less in 4 of his last 5 outings. He's coming off 6 shutout with 7 strikeouts against Tampa Bay. So not the best time to face the guy. I hate when you're like, when you see a guy who's like been like kind of whatever, but he's coming off a great start. It's like, yeah, this might not be the best time to face him. And then he ends up going 7 innings, 1 run against you. And it's like, shit. But he has walked multiple guys in 12 of his last 14 starts. So the key to this guy is going to be take advantage when he walks you, because he's going to walk you. Hitters for these guys, they're going to have two 40 homer men this year. Gunnar Henderson, Anthony Santander, who's an incoming free agent, who I'm sure we're going to have plenty of conversations about this offseason. Both those guys are going to be at 40 homers when this thing's all said and done. Recently, Ramon Urias, who's like at the bottom of their lineup, and like you feel like he's one of their easier guys, whatever, like you feel like it's a brick in the lineup. Actually, that hasn't been the case recently. Last 21 games, he's got a 993 OPS. Cedric Mullins, who also has not had the best of years the last couple, he has a 937 OPS over his last 25 games. On the other side of things, Adley Rutschman, 566 OPS in his last 23 games, and Jackson Holliday, the obvious former number one prospect in baseball, has a 505 OPS in his last 27 games. So still not a lot of success for Jackson Holliday in the majors, even though he did have that awesome stretch when he got called back up for the second time, has not been the same since that stretch. So obviously a series that the Red Sox are going to need to do damage in. Joe, let's get a score update. We must have had some correct predictions here. I think I got the series right, but I feel like everyone did. There's no way.
There was only one person who didn't get it right, and that was right here, because I thought that it was going to be a sweep, and obviously they didn't. Everyone else predicted 2 out of 3. Look, when you're feeling optimistic, you're feeling optimistic. But anyway,
love God, everyone, Joe.
I was so close to saying 1 out of 3. I was feeling so down about the Red Sox, but then I looked at the White Sox roster.
You can't.
And I was like, no.
It's a minimum 2 out of 3 prediction for every team, no matter what team it is. But anyway, Sammy still leads with 16. Pat in second with 13. Me still in third, even though I got it wrong with 10. Gordo last with 9.
Let's go back to back for Gordo, though. Let's go. Joe, I'm coming for you. Coming for that ass. Let's go.
What was that New York accent you just did? Let's go.
Let's go. Let's go. Yeah, let's go. Yeah. Gabagool. Have you guys seen like those? This is just randomly coming to my head because you said New York, but those guys, like the Costco guys, those guys piss me off.
Love them. Love them. Huge dude, fan.
That pisses me off. Confused. All they do
chocolate chip.
Boom. Like, get out of here with that shit, man. Like, come on.
Of course we like the chicken. Let him go to school. I love it, dude. It's great. He's like, the dad always talks about the chocolate chip, and then the kid's like, I like the chicken bake, dad.
Let him have a life. Good
like
God.
A modern day Mickey Mouse.
Boom.
Well, anyway, Pat did submit his picks for all this, and he did the series, and he says that the Sox are going to lose 2 out of 3.
So I'll go next because I think Pat's onto something there. So much of me wants to say that this is the series that's going to be the true nail in the coffin. Like, actually, like we've talked about, like, whatever. We talked about the season being maybe dead and the Red Sox maybe being out of contention. And like, if they get swept, like, that's the true nail in the coffin. Like, they're Dunsky if they get swept. It feels like that could be what's coming. But you look at the pitching matchups and it doesn't scream sweep to me. I don't love the third game in the series. I feel like they might, and I honestly don't love the second game in the series because Albert Suarez pitched so well. I'm gonna say they take the first game and that's it. 1 out of 3. I'm going with Pat. Right.
Fuck that guy, Albert Suarez. That I'm still mad at that one guy who tweeted at me like, you don't know who Albert Suarez is, bro. Shut up, dude.
Shut up.
All right, I'll go. Red Sox are gonna sweep the Orioles because it makes no sense. And like I said 1,000 times, I've just all season been predicting what I don't think will happen. So I think they're going to sweep the Orioles and we're all going to be shocked. And then they'll probably blow it the next series. But we'll get to that next series. So Red Sox sweep.
Wow. That tight lead and you're still going that risky. I am going to go on the same path as Gordo. Win, loss, loss. I like Bayo in this matchup. And I think Povich will struggle, but I don't see the offense doing anything against Suarez and against Kramer. So 1 out of 3 for me.
What are we afraid of? We're afraid of Dean Kramer. Dean Kramer.
Hey, he's a member of the tribe, Sammy. Don't watch
your mouth. Yeah, but that doesn't mean it doesn't scare me. I
watch your mouth. Oh,
I met
six shot.
You want to talk about members of the tribe? I met Goldberg. this week. He's scary. Dean Kremer, not scary.
Kremer. He's got show hair, dude.
Yeah, why don't you make my coffee less bitter, Kremer? You freaking nerd. My God, get out of here.
Oh, a nerd calling a fellow person a nerd.
Hey, man, I'm not a nerd even though I went. I'm not a nerd even though I talked about Pokemon for like 5 minutes on this episode.
Nerd. Nah, I definitely All right, it is time for Crystal Bomb. Bomb it.
Bomb it.
Bomb it. Joe, did anyone get... Actually, I feel like we had a couple. I definitely didn't get it right.
Oh, we did. Ice cold. We did have a couple. The two people that are on your side, on each side of you, Gordo, got a point.
Shit, am I dying in this race, Joe? Is he ahead by three on me now?
Sammy's got 22 after Connor Wong blasted one.
Big stepper. Underground record.
Gordo went with Jaren Duran and was incorrect, and you have 18. So you,
oh my God, he's ahead by four
to Sammy.
Oh my God,
Pat struck out with Rob Refsnyder. Me, I went double on Tyler O'Neill, even though it's only a point. O'Neill hit two in one game. So how do you like that? Even though I'm still in the basement with six.
So Sammy is legitimately on pace to win both of these contests for the season. He's in the lead for both. Joe, how many is he in the lead for series predictions? How much?
Three
is he
ahead of Pat. Place? Three ahead.
Oh
of
my
Pat.
God! Sammy, you're really going to get it done.
Five series left.
This is like better than a World Series, dude. You're about to get this. Shit
I've been
done.
Telling you for the series prediction. I have told you guys my strategy 100 times all year long. I pretty much say it before every pick, and you guys don't use the strategy. It's the key. You just pick what you don't think is going to happen because this Red Sox team makes no sense.
It's fair. It's
a lot of pressure then on this pick, Gordo.
I'm taking Crystal Ball. I'm going first because I really need a win.
Well, Pat did submit his pick, so
okay, that's true. I'm not going to take who he took, but tell me who he took.
Pat took Tristan Casas.
All right, I'm going to go with Tyler O'Neill. He gets hot and he gets cold. I'm hoping, Joe, with your two home run game, both called by Don Orsillo, he's going to be hot. I'm going Don. Joe, I want you to go next. Take whoever Sammy's thinking.
Okay. Let me think. I might want to go with my bread and butter and go with Sedan here just because I'm feeling it. I'm feeling frisky. But you know what? I'm not going to do that. You know who I'm going to take? I am going to take
Danny Jansen.
Jaren Duran.
Damn it.
I will take Jaren Duran. I just feel
taking
like
Liam Hendricks.
He's he's in that wave of where he struggled in this series, at least from a power perspective. I think he'll rebound against this Orioles team.
Okay.
Right, who are you taking, Sammy? And why is it Mickey Gasper?
I'm going to take Devers because another strategy I've been using is taking the best home run hitter on the team as much as possible. Sorry if this offends. So I'm taking Devers. I believe I took Wong last week and O'Neill the week before, so I can't take either of those. Yeah, I'm going to use my Raffy pick. The last time I picked Raffy was in that 5-game series against Toronto. I thought that was going to be a lock, like 5-game stretch. Of course, Devers is going to
get hurt.
He only played 2 games. So I kind of got screwed. So this is my Raffy redemption pick. Alliteration never loses. Raffy redemption. Let's do it.
You're right, man. That's the strategy right there. Alliteration.
Wait, that was
I should have had that shit in May.
Alliteration, right? That's the right word? Nothing of something else? Yeah, okay.
No, you're right. It never fails.
I said it, and then I doubted myself. And there's a lesson to all of you kids, and don't doubt yourself.
All right, we got some Tyler Taters coming this series, all right? So, nice. All right, Sammy, what do we got to close this baby out? What are we doing?
Oh, no losing, just winning. It's guys being dudes.
Yeah.
Gordo, were you biting your lip while I was saying that?
He's so turned on by the way you say it.
Wow. Gordo loves when guys are dudes.
Say it slower.
Guys being dudes. All right. Who would like to go first? We're going to have to get really, really creative because like we've done like Matt Albers, Greg Kimbrell, you know.
I'll go first. I'll get this
one. OG, you hire. Yeah, no Bill Hall. No Bill Hall, by the way. We already did Bill Hall like five times.
Gordo. Well, first, let me share Pat's pick. and he went with Andrew Kashner. Obviously,
we don't need to talk about the Andrew Kashner Red Sox era.
No, we do not. No, we do not. But I'm going to go with a guy, legend in Red Sox lore, but some might have forgotten that he actually played with Baltimore. How about our guy Koji? Koji Uehara was a Baltimore Oriole before he was a Red Sox. I think also there was a Ranger stop right before then. But anyway, Koji, enough said about that one. Red Sox legend. And didn't do it in Baltimore, but he was able to do it in Boston.
How old was he as a rookie?
I don't know.
He must have been like 33. I'm going to look it up. Sammy, you say what you're going to say. I'll look it up.
I believe, yes, confirmed. When Koji played for the Orioles, he had huge sideburns. Like sideburns that went down to like where your beard begins, and then they just disappear. A terrible, terrible look. I'm glad he got rid of that on the Red Sox. He looked like a 1940s like hipster guy, like what hipsters look like back then. It was painful to look at, but clearly it was holding him back as a pitcher, because once he got rid of the mutton chops, I guess you could call them. They're not quite mutton chops, just gigantic sideburns. Once he got rid of those gross... Oh, God, are we bringing up a picture? Yeah, you can't really see it there. Oh, God, Gordo's picture is... Oh, God, yeah, that's such a bad look. He probably, at that point in life, needed people to be more honest with him and just say, Koji, the giant sideburns are 60 years outdated or more, maybe. So
he was 34 as a rookie with the Orioles. But yeah, not the best sideburns. He was definitely better with the Red Sox. Kaz was definitely not born or not old enough to tell him what's what.
I don't want to hear about Kaz Uehara. I don't think any human in the world makes me feel older than that guy. Because I remember when he was a little kid, and now he's like a college athlete. This makes me actually feel old.
Yeah. All right, I'll go next. I'm going with a guy that I was excited when the Red Sox got when I was a kid. It was Javi Lopez. I was very excited when the Red Sox got him. Catcher Javi, not the pitcher, not the left-handed World Series winning savant. Javi Lopez, he hit 43 bombs 3 years before the Red Sox got him, and he was rated very highly in MVP Baseball 05, which had me thinking that the Red Sox got this absolute stud. He was not good for the Red Sox. He hit 190. I said he hit 43 bombs 3 years prior. He hit zero homers with the Red Sox. He had a 485 OPS in 18 games. This was not the Javi Lopez that young Gordo was expecting the Red Sox to get. This was old, washed Javi Lopez that we didn't need. But shout out Javi Lopez for making kid Gordo feel things when you came to our organization.
Yeah, dude, three-time All-Star, World Series champion, Silver Slugger, NLCS MVP. Was not good, though, with the Red Sox. I thought you were talking about the other Javier Lopez. Sidewinder guy. I was like, I didn't know he played for the Orioles. Good recall, Gordo, but whoops. Yeah, I felt the same way. I remember being really excited when they got him because Lopez was sick in MVP Baseball 2005.
Exactly.
Which obviously is the greatest way to measure baseball talent back then.
That's the influence for us, though. For anyone our age, if they were rated well in that game, like you just thought they were good. Like Esteban Loaiza was like a free agent pitcher in that game, and I always signed him to my teams, and then he ended up going to jail for like being a coke dealer. So
it's classic Esteban right there.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go with a guy that you guys both know and love because he's your friend. I'm talking about Owen Friend. That's right. I know you guys were expecting me to bring up Owen Friend. He played for the St. Louis Browns, which was the Baltimore Orioles. And he was quite bad. He played 121 games for them, 8 home runs, not very many. And then he had a very, very, very satanic OPS, 666, which was very bad. A few years later, the Red Sox were like, why don't we pick that guy up? He looks satanic and really good at baseball, even though the numbers say otherwise. And he stunk for the Red Sox, too. This was back in, 1955. Yeah, obviously I was alive for that, as you guys know. He hit 262 with a 659 OPS, so he didn't have the Satan There it is. Owen Friend. Owen Friend. He didn't have the satanic boost this time. He still sucked. So yeah, Owen Friend, one of the infielders of all time. He certainly played for both franchises, and
that's the qualification.
That's all that matters at the end of the day.
You could hit 100, you hit 500. You play for both teams, you're on the table for guys beating dudes. That's why there's no losers.
And that's what they say. Yeah.
That is what they say. And that's what made the segment great. But in any case, we appreciate you guys tuning in for episode 126 of Play Tessie. Before you go about your day, make sure you hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening, wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Helps us out so much. You can also check us out on YouTube on the WEI page. We got a Play Tessie podcast there, playlist there, where you can find all of our episodes. Remember to hit the thumbs up on those videos. As always, you can find us on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. For Sammy and for Joe, it's Gordo here. We will see you guys an episode in your ear tomorrow, because guess what? Bobby Dalbec got DFA'd and we didn't talk about it once in this episode. So guess what? We're going to talk about it tomorrow in the next episode. So be ready. Be on the lookout. If you subscribe, you'll get a notification when that thing comes out. So get ready for episode 127 coming tomorrow. But till next time, this was episode 126 of Play Tessie. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.